Now, back to Vocal Point with your host, Jerry Newcomb, on GraceNetRadio.com.
All right, this is Jerry Newcomb, and our next guest is also a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute, and we're trying to reach Dr. Stephen Meyer. Dr. Meyer, are you there?
Back to you as soon as...
Oh, okay, no, he's not there. Isn't that interesting? Well, we reconfirmed with him, but let me just say a few things about Dr. Stephen Meyer. He's written a best-selling book, and it's called Darwin's Doubt, and there's a new Cosmos series, which is raising a lot of doubts about... God's creation, and so we're going to talk about that with him. And it's interesting to look at the fact that I guess just recently, in fact, it was reported just yesterday, scientists said earlier this week that they have found the fossil of a shrimp-like creature that lived 520 million years ago, I would add the word supposedly, with an exquisitely preserved heart and blood vessels that represent the oldest known cardiovascular system. Now, that's very interesting, and that was found in the country of Turkey. And so the preservation of soft tissue, what are the implications of that? These are some of the questions we're going to ask Dr. Meyer as soon as we can reach him. The Darwinists certainly control the schools. They control the media. And, in fact, you see sometimes... dogmatic presentations of the Darwinian point of view. So, for example, in Time Magazine, April 7, 2014, the new host of the Cosmos program, the old one is pretty atheistic. That was the one with Carl Sagan. But the new one is also atheistic. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's an astrophysicist, he had a situation where creationist groups demanded airtime on his new space science program, Cosmos, and he said, quote, "You don't talk about the spherical Earth with NASA and then say, let's give equal time to the flat earthers." Well, on GraceNetRadio.com, as soon as we get Dr. Meyer on the line, we'll be giving equal time, if you will, to those who don't believe in the total Darwinian system and know we're not flat earthers. And so I think it's a very interesting debate. It seems to be going on for years and years and years. But, you know, the interesting thing about a debate is if you only hear one side, if you only hear one side of the debate, which side are you to believe? And so I think that's a situation that is happening so much when it comes to the whole creation evolution debate. In fact, let me say this. Years ago, there was a book that came out by a man named Luther Sunderland. And he was a creationist, and he was a retired scientist, and he wrote this book, and basically his book was called Darwin's Enigma. And he pointed out in his book that even though Darwin was very dogmatic in his presentation and so forth, he basically did not account for the actual findings that we have in the fossil record. And in fact, Stephen Meyer, whom we're hoping to get in just a moment, has even written a book that elaborates on that same very theme. It's called Darwin's Doubt. And but here's the gist of it. The fossil record, instead of showing Darwin's theory that, you know, from common ancestor, then you have basically species, different type of species evolving, you know, from one kind to another kind. Instead, what you have is what could be called abrupt appearances. You have, for example, in the levels of the fossil record, nothing, 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 and then going up to a higher level in something called the Cambrian period, which the scientists say is supposedly 500 million years ago. I don't know about that date, but let's suppose, grant them that for a second, okay? 500 million years ago. But what do you have in that Cambrian time? You have an explosion. You have an explosion of life with the different species of different kinds all appearing all at once. Now, personally, I think maybe what we're looking at with the Cambrian explosion is actually evidence for Noah's flood. Now, maybe that puts me in a minority position, but the fact is According to A.E. Wilder Smith, who had multiple PhDs in science, and he was a creation scientist, by the way, he died, but he did a series called Origins, and A.E. Wilder Smith once pointed out that 98% of organisms do not fossilize. 98%. And so what that means is that only 2% of organisms that die have been fossilized. And usually the conditions by which something becomes a fossil is if it's buried quickly. Couldn't that be evidence for Noah's flood? I mean, think about it. No, Noah's flood, according to the Bible, was a universal flood. Now, I hear lots of weird things about this new movie, Noah, and some things that make me wonder whether I should even go see it. And I talked to my good friend Ted Baer sometimes, and he says that you have to look at the big picture, and in the big picture, it does affirm some of the major points about the Bible, man's sin. God spares Noah and his family because of them being righteous, or at least Noah being righteous, and to spare people for the earth. There's a universal flood in judgment of man's sin, and then afterwards there's hope because of the people that are left, Noah and his family, and it goes from there. But here's the thing about the flood. What you have with the flood is something that would change the laws of physics, and that would change things the way we find them in the fossil record. Now, in the second book, second epistle of Peter to the Christians, the early Christians, he talked about how in the last days there will be scoffers that arise. And these scoffers will say, well, where is his coming? Meaning, when is Jesus coming? It's been quite a while. Now, he wrote that in the first century. If people were scoffing about that in the first century, how much more so in the 21st century? But hey, God is outside of time. In that very same point, that very same chapter, Peter says, look, to the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. So, since Jesus came, to God, it's been like 2 days ago. Where were you 48 hours ago? You know, hey, it wasn't that long. So it isn't that long to God, because God is outside of time. But here's an interesting point that Peter says about the scoffers that will arise in the last time, or in the last days. They'll arise and they'll say that creation is like it always was from the very beginning of time. But think about this. If there was a universal flood, and I believe there definitely was, and by the way, there's lots of historical evidence for a universal flood, then that definitely is different than an evolutionary type situation where supposedly life was going on planet Earth without any kind of change. So in other words, the laws of nature and so forth would have definitely been altered if there was indeed a worldwide flood. Listen to this. I once interviewed a creation scientist, and I know to some people they sound like just flat earth type people. No, they're not flat earth type people. They have recognized PhDs from recognized schools. Of course, as they're going through it, they can't volunteer the information that they believe in creation science, because if they do, they will be ostracized. They will be stripped of their degree, despite how hard they've worked in that particular subject or that particular field. And no matter how brilliant they are, because there's viewpoint discrimination when it comes to anti-creation science bias. And I would throw into that same category intelligent design, of which Stephen Meyer is a theorist of that. And Dr. Stephen Meyer, by the way, earned his PhD at Cambridge University. So he is no intellectual slouch, nor are these other thinkers, you know, on this side. But anyway, let me go back to this creation scientist. So I interviewed this creation scientist, and he made an interesting observation. He said, we know that evolutionists believe, for example, that the Grand Canyon was created over millions and millions of years by slowly running water drip by drip year by year, century by century, eon by eon, and boom, after all these millions and millions of years, supposedly, you have the Grand Canyon. Now, working on a different thesis, there was a creation scientist who thought in the 1980s, wait a minute, what if the Grand Canyon was created actually quickly by rushing water, that is, by Noah's flood? What if that happened? Oh, now that sounds preposterous, you say. But that same scientist, Dr. Steve Austin, who's a geologist and is one of the scientists of the Institute for Creation Research, I've interviewed him at least once, I remember that. He's not the bionic man, but anyway, Dr. Steve Austin studied what happened in 1980 in the state of Washington after Mount St. Helena erupted. And he said there were many Grand Canyons that were created just in a few days by fast rushing water. Rushing water, fast rushing water can cause all kinds of catastrophes. In fact, I've even seen video from Japan of after one of the tsunamis about a couple years ago showing the devastating impact of fast rushing water. So here you have these mini Grand Canyons created after Mount St. Helens that Dr. Steve Austin was writing about. Okay, but here's what Dr. Steve Austin proposed, theorized, and found to be true. And this is absolutely fascinating. In the Grand Canyon, the one that's in multiple states, the one I've never seen yet, but I look forward to see one day. Anyway, in the Grand Canyon, about in the middle, there is a layer of sediment there, and there are formerly alive organisms. I think they're called arthropods. They're kind of like noodles, long noodles. Actually, you know what they're like? You know those toys that children have sometimes in swimming pools, and they're long, stringy-like things, and they can float? Those kinds of things with pools? Those types, picture that kind of thing, but picture it as an alive organism and not obviously of some sort of artificial color. And it is those kinds of creatures that have been found in the Grand Canyon, in the middle. So that actually proves, and that's found, by the way, since the 1980s, operating on a different model, a different starting point. And that actually proved, I think, that no, the Grand Canyon couldn't have been formed by all that drip, drip, drip of water. At least the second half of it couldn't have been because of those organisms that were trapped in the middle, that had died and were trapped in the middle. In other words, what we see over and over and over, if you have the right starting point, we see evidence for what the Bible talks about, creation, fall, and flood. Creation, fall, and flood gives a very, very different model. Now, there's a non-Christian book that was written in the 1980s by a man named William Fix. For whatever reason, he spelled his first name William, W-M, capital W, little M, William Fix, and it's called The Bone Peddlers. The Bone Peddlers. I once bought two copies. I gave one to the late Dr. D. James Kennedy, my longtime pastor, and I have been an employee. In fact, I'm still employed full-time by Truth and Action Ministries, formerly called Coral Ridge Ministries. Anyway, the late Dr. D. James Kennedy was very happy to receive this gift that I gave him, The Bone Peddlers. Now, this book was weird in its conclusion. I think he was one of those who believed that, well, the only way to explain the miracle of, you know, life is that it came from outer space, you know, something to that effect. But the gist of it, and the reason why it was of interest to me and the interest of Dr. Kennedy, was that he showed how human evolution, how we're led to believe when you see that timeline of, you know, a stooped over ape-like creature, and then there's another frame, and it's a little less stooped over, and then another frame, and now all of a sudden not walking on fours, but maybe with two legs, but still stooped over, but with a bigger skull or whatever. You know, you have this metamorphosis of this evolutionary timeline. Total nonsense. Total baloney. In fact, on the back of that book, William Fix's book, The Bone Peddlers, he has example after example after example of the famous former caveman or whatever, the famous forerunner supposedly to modern man, Zinjanthropus, Piltdown Man, Cro-Magnon Man, Neanderthal, all shown to be recategorized in one way or another, either as some sort of ancient man or some sort of ancient ape, or as in the case of Piltdown Man, that was a deliberate fraud. A deliberate fraud, but it came at a very pivotal time for the acceptance of evolution in the 19-teens until it was discovered to be a deliberate hoax in the 1950s. But by then, evolution was being taught dogmatically in more and more circles. Then, of course, after Sputnik happened, then John F. Kennedy said a couple of years later, hey, we've got to really have a greater emphasis on teaching science. And unfortunately, part of teaching science today, in today's milieu, and that, of course, includes the 1960s and beyond, is this dogmatic belief in evolution, despite the fact that there's a lot of evidence against evolution, despite the fact that Darwin himself had some very serious doubts about the subject. Now, I'm having some doubts about whether I can reach Dr. Meyer, but let's try again, and hopefully we'll be able to talk with him on this program. Dr. Stephen Meyer, again, author of Darwin's Doubt, and Dr. Meyer is a senior fellow with the Discovery Institute, and he is quite knowledgeable about the whole subject of creation, evolution, and he likes to describe himself as a theorist for intelligent design. I know one time in one of the discussions I had with him, he said, when you just think about the design of the universe, the design, let's say, even of the simplest cell of the human body, it is absolutely amazing. He said, to say that it just made itself, which is what the evolutionists say, that would be like if you were playing Scrabble, okay, and let's say you took all the letters of a Scrabble board and you just shook them up and then you spilled them out and then they perfectly spelled out the Declaration of Independence. That's impossible. Well, obviously we're having trouble reaching Dr. Meyer, so I will just keep talking here, and I will continue on my little comments about creation evolution. Now, I think that we have to realize that the age of the Earth question is one issue. And I think that it's interesting how some people can make a big deal about that. Others would say, well, how could this square with the Bible? I think we have to realize the Bible doesn't give us an exact age of the Earth. You could count the genealogies, which some have done, but the genealogies themselves, if you look at Matthew and you look at Luke, you realize that these are not unabridged. There are not missing links, but there are people that are missing there. And so to be able to just count them up and say dogmatically, well, the earth began at such and such a date, well, how do you know that? Now, in the meantime, going back to the point I was making earlier, if the world, and I believe it did, went through this worldwide universal flood all over this whole globe, would that not change all the times and the readings and the different laws and so forth? There's an assumption that the earth was always the same way from the beginning of time to the present. There's that assumption, and it's that assumption that is never, talked about, but it's through those kinds of assumptions that people come to the conclusion that supposedly the Earth is, billions and billions and billions of years old. But forget about the age of the Earth for a second. Just look at a few things. First of all, what is the oldest man-made structure in the world? I've seen it. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen it. It's in Israel. Or would you say Palestine? Actually, this is part that is part of Israel that's controlled by the Palestinians at present. That's why, in fact, our tour was, while we went there, we had to get away briefly so we weren't, going to have rocks pelted at us. It's in Jericho. And it's basically, it looks like a heap of rocks that have been put together, but through some sort of crude cement early on. And they say it was supposedly about 10,000 years old or 8,000 BC, supposedly, in that zone. Thousands of years. Okay? Now, let's look at writing. How old is writing? Well, writing goes back to about 4,500 BC, 2,500 BC. In other words, it's only in the thousands is what we're talking about when it comes to writing. What about when it comes to the age of agriculture? Okay, man was supposedly first a hunter and gatherer and so forth. But what about agriculture? What about farming? What about gardening? Well, that only goes back in the thousands. Literally, the thousands. I mean, less than 8,000 years ago. Really? That's how old farming is? And writing is only, as I say, about 4,500 BC? I mean, we are talking about a relatively young civilization. We think about Jesus having lived so long ago, and yet, when he lived 2,000 years ago, he divided time in half. But it's not as if man has necessarily been around that very long. And so I think it's absolutely fascinating. And yet, unfortunately, evolution is taught dogmatically over and over and over as if it's absolutely a fact. And I think here's where we need to understand in the big picture. This is what saved me. In fact, when I was in college, I was a young Christian, Tulane University in the 1970s. And there was a professor at the competing school, LSU. But at LSU Medical School, there was this wonderful Christian professor that I met at one of the Christian fellowship groups. And I asked him, since he was a medical doctor and a professor at the medical school there at LSU, about creation evolution. And he said, listen, all the evidence for evolution, so-called, is just evidence for microevolution. It's just minor changes within kinds. You don't have major changes beyond kinds. And he's absolutely right. There is not a single fossil in this world chronicling evolution in progress that can be pointed to that would hold up in a court of law. In fact, Dr. Colin Patterson, the late Dr. Colin Patterson of England, from the British Museum, he once actually said that in the book called Darwin's Enigma by Luther Sunderland. And when I read his statement, when he wrote a letter to Luther Sunderland after Luther wrote him, and he wrote Luther back and he said, you know, as an evolutionist, unfortunately, I cannot, I have to agree with you that there is no one transitional form. There's nothing, you know, there's no fossil that would hold up in a court of law. They don't exist as of, you know, at this present. And I don't imagine that we'll find one anytime soon. That's what he wrote in the late 1970s. So I called Dr. Colin Patterson myself. In 1987, I called him because I was working as a producer on a program that ultimately was called The Case for Creation. Dr. D. James Kennedy, the founder, ultimate founder of this radio station, was the host of that program, The Case for Creation. So I asked Dr. Colin Patterson, I said, sir, this is what you're quoted as saying in a book from Luther Sunderland. And I read the appropriate quote. Then I said, is that accurate? Did Luther Sunderland, you know, reproduce your comment correctly, accurately? He said, absolutely. It's definitely accurate. Unfortunately, we can't prove it. Then I said, wow, that's great. And then I explained I was working on a program about the case for creation, kind of a Scopes trial in reverse, where Dr. Kennedy, our host, got up actually in the very courtroom where the Scopes trial took place in 1925. And here he was in 1988. In that very same trial or same courtroom, in a sense, trying the Scopes trial, but in reverse. You know, it was putting the whole issue of evolution on trial. And, of course, it was found wanting in our program, The Case for Creation. It ended up being a classic program. Anyway, bottom line is, I said, Dr. Patterson, would you be willing to say on camera just what you said to me on the phone, that this is accurate, you know, what you're saying here in this letter In other words, there are no transitional forms showing evolution is true. He said, no. He said, don't misunderstand me. He said, I believe in evolution. And he pronounced it like that, evolution. He did. He pronounced it like that. He said, but just, you know, the fact is we don't have the right mechanism to explain evolution yet. So, in other words, he believed in evolution. He just didn't want to be confused by the facts. And so, no, he did not want to participate with this silly creation outfit in Florida, USA, to, you know, make a point in favor of creationism. So microevolution are these small changes within kind. Macroevolution is what people mean really when they say the word evolution. And evolution is essentially unproven. And what they do, though, is they will marshal evidence that is seen of small changes within types, within kinds, that can be, you know, monitored and can be seen in nature. But what they do is they extrapolate to larger gaps, to larger changes that occurred. But the fact is that as they look at these different fossils, basically what you find is you find organisms fully formed. And you don't find one kind becoming another kind. Now, there may be subspecies within species, but there are different kinds, and those are the lines, those are the barriers that are not crossed. And so, therefore, what we have in our culture today, including in academia, including in the media, with examples like this new series, Cosmos, just like the old series, Cosmos, what you have in some museums, you have basically a big snow job, and it's called evolution. And they use the evidence that we have in nature of microevolution, small changes, and they extrapolate from there. And what's interesting is there were even two theorists, one of whom has died and since become a creationist because he had to stand before the Creator, right? Stephen Jay Gould of Harvard, probably the leading evolutionist of America before he died a few years ago. Anyway, these two theorists, including Gould, came up with the idea that, well, maybe evolution happened so fast. Maybe it happened so fast, and that's why it's not found in the fossil record. But then the idea there is what? A bird gives birth to lays an egg and then a reptile pops out or vice versa. No, I mean, come on. There's no evidence for that. And so, as Ken Ham likes to say, in other words, evolution happens so slowly, we can't see it. When evolution happens so fast, we can't see it. Well, maybe evolution didn't happen at all. This is Jerry Newcomb. God bless you. We'll see you next time on Vocal Point right here on gracenetradio.com. And I want to leave you with one very profound thought. This came from the late, great Charlie Hainline. You ready for this? Listen to this. Look to others and be distressed. Look to self and be depressed. Look to Jesus and be blessed. Lord willing, we'll see you next week. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Vocal Point. The views and opinions were those of the host and guests, and not necessarily those of GraceNetRadio.com or any of its staff, management, or affiliations. Join us next Thursday at noon for Vocal Point on GraceNetRadio.com.